The following sermon was delivered at the 10:30 worship service at the United Methodist Church of Kent. Please enjoy.
Throughout this whole season of Lent, as we've been saying, we are preparing, and we are being prepared by God's grace for the central celebration, the culminating event of our whole Christian faith. In many ways, everything that we say, everything that we do, everything that we believe, everything that we are, all flows and grows out of Easter, out of this truth that the God of the gospel, the God who is love, who is life, who is liberation, this God, this one always is moving us toward life. We can express that truth, that movement toward life in any number of different ways, and we do. We can express it physically or spiritually or historically. We can express it literally or metaphorically. But whichever way we express it, the truth of it, the truth of Easter remains. That this God whom we gather here to worship and go forth to serve is one who plumbs all of our deepest negations and creates new possibilities, new spaces for life, new energies for transformation, new waves of joy. Always and everywhere, this is the God of new beginnings. The seal and the ultimate sign of that is, of course, Easter. On that first Easter morning, as we will remember again in a couple of weeks, early in the morning on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, we discovered to our great astonishment and surprise that the very same Jesus whom we had just tortured and killed in state execution now is alive and on the loose. For death has no power over God's will for life. All the many deadly systems of empire, in Jesus' case the Roman Empire, but just as surely all the others, every system of death and despair and exploitation, they have no grip on God whatsoever. That is the truth of Easter, this movement of God toward life. That's the truth for which we are now preparing. And yet, in truth, God has been doing this forever. This triumph of life over death by God doesn't begin at Easter. Always God has been moving us, always God is moving us and the whole creation toward fullness of life. For this is the same God we remember through our sacred stories, the same God who took shapeless and formless earth in hand, who said, "Let there be light," and formed a fruitful land, land and light for life. And ever since that first moment before time, God has been doing it again and again and again, taking all of our disorder, all of our dis-ease, and reforming it, transforming it into surprising starting points for new life to begin again. And this is the same God we remember also who intervened into our divided and warring world in the time of Noah, who made a way for humans and for other animals and for all of creation to start over again, to make a new beginning. And ever since, God's been doing it again and again and again, reaching out to us and establishing new relationships with us, staying faithful to the covenant with us, even when all that we can perceive our endings. And this is the same God who came to that desperate couple, Sarah and Abraham, in their old age, giving to them not only a child for whom they had longed, but an unimaginable future. And ever since, God's been doing it again and again, giving folks futures where they thought that every door had been closed, opening possibilities for something new. And this is the same God who came to folks enslaved in Egypt, weary from being abused for cheap labor in a society obsessed with endless production. God heard their cries and saw their abuse and came to deliver them. And ever since, God's been doing that again and again, hearing folks' cries and breaking chains of exploitation so that all people can celebrate together in freedom. Absolutely everywhere that we look throughout the stories that we've been reading throughout the season of Lent, we discover in them again and again this movement of God toward life, from formlessness into fruitfulness, from division into relationship, from hopelessness into promise, from enslavement into liberation. In every single apparent dead end, God makes new life. So too then, in our reading today from Jeremiah, here in the 31st chapter, God speaks to the community through the prophet, and it is a community who is being crushed by Babylon's empire. It's yet another situation of deep uncertainty about life and faith and possibility. But into that desperate situation, like a crocus pushing up through the cold, hard soil, God abruptly breaks through with a new declaration that God is going to do it again, that God is going to move us toward life again. God will make a new covenant with us, reestablish a relationship with us based in God's faithfulness. Through God's own initiative, entirely not of our prompting, but only because of God's own goodness and grace, we then will be able to count on, to rely on, God's promise and presence and power in our lives and in our life together. The hard reality of life under empire no longer will define us, no longer will defeat us. For God moves to open new possibilities. God's new covenant with us will be new life and new beginnings out of the deadliness of despair. And notice, if you don't notice anything else, notice this. Notice the center, notice the locus of this new covenant that God is making with us. God will write, God will engrave Torah, that is, God's instructions or God's way for life. God will engrave it onto our hearts. Before, the instructions had been written on scrolls, and there we had resisted them. We didn't welcome God's way into our lives. We preferred thinking that we could have life our own way, that we could go it our own way, that we didn't need God's way. But now God says Torah will be a part of us. Torah, God's instructions, will be the air that fills our lungs, will be the rhythm of our hearts. And so we won't need to do anything special or go anywhere extraordinary to reconnect with our Creator, our Lover, and our Companion. In our hearts, at the very core of our being, where all of our hopes are born and our loves are nourished and cherished, in our hearts, in our own hearts that we carry around with us all the time, we will find grounding and centering and alignment and stability in a world that feels so often like it's spinning out of control. This is surely yet another earlier act of resurrection, rooted in God's faithful love. For I have loved you, God says to us at the beginning of this 31st chapter of Jeremiah. I have loved you, God says, with a love that lasts forever. And so with unfailing love, I have drawn you to myself. My encouragement for you today would be to sit with that truth for some moments in this coming week. The truth that moved by a love that lasts forever, God's unfailing love, has been written onto our hearts, yours and mine. God's covenant, God's way, God's faithfulness and loving kindness reside at the very center of our being. What a gift that is. And what an invitation to give attention to our center, to attend to our hearts, our interior lives, to that place within each of us where God resides. To notice not only God's movement toward life out in the world around us, but God's same movement toward life within us too. I know that can be hard for us, of course, to notice God's movement in us, to give attention to our interior lives. There's a lot of noise, many distractions that make it difficult for us to focus, to see, to listen. Joan Chittister, who is a Benedictine nun living over in Erie, Pennsylvania, a wonderful author and theologian, borrows an old story from the Zen tradition to illustrate this. Once upon a time, the story says, a master had a visitor who came to inquire about Zen. But instead of listening, the visitor kept talking about his own concerns and giving his own thoughts. After a while, the master got up and served tea. He poured tea into his visitor's cup until it was full, and then he kept on pouring. Finally, the visitor couldn't bear it any longer. "Don't you see that my cup is full?" he said. "It's not possible to get any more in." "Just so," the master said, stopping at last. And like this cup, you are filled with your own ideas. How can you expect me to give you Zen unless you first empty your cup? Lent, friends, is our season for emptying our cups. Lent is our time for spring cleaning our lives, scraping away the sludge that has built up on us over time. Lent is our invitation to take stock of time in the ways that we use and so often fill time. Our opportunity to practice exercising some self-control, say no to ourselves, so that when life turns hard, we have the spiritual stamina to say yes to all of its twists and turns with hope and courage and curiosity. In today's gospel, Jesus tells us that he will soon die and be raised. He uses in this the image of grains of wheat planted in soil, buried into the ground so that they can sprout a new life. It's an image that makes me think of plants this time of year. Every spring, there's some removing to be done. Removing last year's growth, the leaves that have collected over the winter. And when we do that, when we pull those things away, we discover underneath new life that's already been growing. Perhaps part of Jeremiah's and Jesus' invitation for us today is to do the same removing process with our hearts. To clear away some of the clutter, to set aside time to be still and to listen, so that we can honor the movement of our own hearts, that innate sense within each of us to do goodness and justice in our neighborhoods, so we can uncover God's love that's always and already growing there, and the many ways that God is moving us toward life. I wonder where you sense that movement toward life within yourself. When it is that you're most attuned to it or open to it? When do you feel most alive? Not just energized in a superficial way, but really alive from your core, open to new possibilities, to new capabilities, to new futures beyond your own doing. Part of Lent's invitation for us is to pause and to give attention there through prayer and through contemplation, to notice the radiant sanctuary within us, to notice the incredible reality that God has chosen our hearts, that God has chosen the core of our being to be God's own dwelling place. We want to see Jesus, some folks say in today's gospel. Lent invites us, if we feel likewise, to look within us, to practice that inward seeing, that inward listening, that inward attending to the one who is in us and with us all the time. For just a week from now, we'll begin our journey of Holy Week. And just a week after that, Easter Sunday. And with it, the invitation to participate with God's presence in resurrection. For after all, Easter is not just about celebrating resurrection. Easter is about experiencing resurrection and collaborating with God in resurrection in the world around us. But all of that movement toward life around us rings hollow without some attention inward, toward our interior lives in the presence of the one who dwells therein. I will be your God, God says to us today, and you will be my people. That is the truth about us, the truth written by God's own hand upon our hearts. So by grace, may we know it. May we sense it. May we feel it. And then may we live it, as we continue to prepare together to live resurrection. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the United Methodist Church of Kent Sermon Podcast. For more information about the church, visit www.kentmethodist.org.